Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is Irresponsible Day for the 8th of Nisan. With thanks to the OU.org and their staff, including Rabbi Jacob Bromwitz and David Hochhauser, for hosting our shiurim. For the 8th of Nisan, we're going to see primarily a tshuva responsible of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach from Minchat Shlomo Tinyan, the second volume, or the later volume, Simon Pei Bet, responsible number 82. And the question that he's posing to himself is whether children, minors, and non-Jews are obligated to listen to Chachamim, to Torah scholars, to sages. He means like Chazal, have the power to make rules or legislations for kids who are theoretically not obligated to do anything because they're minors, they don't have legal status. And second, for non-Jews who aren't part of the Jewish people. This is from the 8th of Nisan of Tafshin Nun of 1990, when Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was about 80 years old. So he starts by saying he knows that a lot of people say they have a question about whether the prohibition of lo tasur, right? For ordinary Jews, when Chazal say something, we have to listen to it because the Torah says lo tasur min hadavar she'yagidu lecha yamin u'smol. The Torah, in that context, is actually talking about a zaken mamre, that if somebody goes to Yerushalayim to consult with the Great Sanhedrin and the Great Sanhedrin tells him what they're supposed to do, then you have to listen to it. And there's a biblical prohibition, lo tasur, you can't stray from what they do. But it's generally understood, meaning from the Gemara's time already, that pasuk also applies to any other rabbinic legislation. That when Chazal tell us things to do, we have to listen to them because of Lo Tasur. The Rambam, in fact, in the beginnings of the Sefer HaMitzvot, that he thinks that every derabanan, every obligation of a rabbinic level, actually has a biblical prohibition attached to it of Lo Tasur, and that gets to all sorts of interesting things. But fundamentally, the Rambam seems to think that when I do, let's say, if I keep Purim is a bad example because it's a Divrei Kabbalah, but let's say I wash my hands before bread, and that's a rabbinic prohibition, commandment. So we all say, well, I'm fulfilling the Rabbanan. Rambam would say, and the Rambam doesn't actually completely disagree, I would say, yes, I'm fulfilling the Rabbanan, but I'm also avoiding transgressing a Doraita of Lo Tasur. So the question is, this is how the conversation, the back and forth that Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach is aware of, is whether Lo Tasur can apply to children who are minors and not seemingly halakhically obligated in anything, and to non-Jews. And that would apply to lots of areas. So Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says, he thinks it's clearly true that when you have a katan, a minor, who's intelligent, knows what's going on, he's reached the age of education, let's say a 9-year-old, a 10-year-old, 11-year-old for sure, he is not, or she, is not allowed to violate Shabbat, even away from other people. Meaning, betzina, so you could say, if it was in front of other people, they would stop him because they have an obligation to raise a kid, to help a kid learn, and we have a whole discussion about who does or doesn't have to stop kids, because they couldn't do it then, or because they're violating public standards, but let's say they're on their own. So it's just them. Maybe you'd say, well, minors don't have any obligations because they're minors, and therefore, if they violate Shabbat, that's up to them. It's not an issue. Rosh Hashanah, I don't know what disagrees. He thinks the same thing is true of, can they wear, let's say you had a garment, today we don't have very many four-cornered garments, such that we actually create garments in order to fulfill the mitzvah of tzitzit, right? We create a small garment, the talit katan, we create a large garment, but those aren't real garments that people generally tend to wear. But let's suppose you had a garment that has four corners to it, and a kid was wearing it, and it didn't have any tzitzis on it, and there's nobody seeing. So again, you might think to yourself, well, the kid doesn't have any problem, he might as well. You might think that the only ones obligated to stop him from doing this is a father, or maybe a court, maybe the public community, but he himself is not commanded anything, right? Now, for him to claim this is interesting because there's actually a debate among Rishonim as to how the obligation of chinuch, of education, works. The Tosfot hold that, let's say I have a kid who's reached the age of education and it comes an opportunity to bench. Tosfot hold that kid, him or herself, is obligated at a rabbinic level to bench. So from that perspective, it's easy for Shlomo Zalman Auerbach to make his claim. He can say, yeah, what you see is that they have a certain obligations at a rabbinic level and the obligations are upon them. So that one is relatively easy. But in that same context and discussion, there are other Rishonim, most prominently, I think, perhaps the Ramban, who held that it's not true, who held that the obligation is on the father to educate the child, and there, in fact, is no obligation on the child at all. Or it seems like that. So Rosh Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says, no, he thinks that's not true. And that comes up because in the context that we're going to see it in a minute anyway, so we might as well bring it up now. There's a discussion in the Gemara about whether a minor can help an adult fulfill an obligation in benching, let's say, is a good example. So let's suppose an adult eats a meal and needs to bench. So that's a a biblical obligation. So the fact that a minor can't help that adult fulfill his obligation, you know, say benching for him, as it were, is because the minor doesn't have a biblical obligation. But the question comes up, let's say the adult only ate enough food that he is obligated to bench to say the grace after meals, the Birkat HaMazon, at a rabbinic level. So then theoretically you could say to yourself, well, the kid's got a rabbinic obligation, the adult's got a rabbinic obligation, let one rabbinic obligation fulfill the other rabbinic obligation. So that's a discussion. So in that conversation, the Ramban says, no, the kid doesn't actually have a rabbinic obligation. The rabbinic obligation is actually on the father to educate the kid. If that were true, then Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach would seem to be in trouble, because he's trying to say he thinks the kid has an independent obligation once he understands or she understands halacha. You can't violate Shabbos, meaning if a 10-year-old is all alone, nobody's going to see him, nobody's going to stop him or her, and they violate Shabbat. The answer is no, they can't, says Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. Why can't they? Is that an application of a rabbinic obligation to them? If it were, that would be a chiddush. That would be the new idea, that we can apply rabbinic obligations to them. So the Ramban and those who agree with the Ramban about benching would seem to say not. So Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says no, he doesn't think it's true, because he says once the Torah, and this is, I think, a very original idea. I certainly don't know of anybody who else who said it. He doesn't quote anybody else who said it. I think it's his original idea, and I think it's a very interesting original idea, and one that there's a lot of, and has a lot of applications to other situations as well, completely independent of this one. Because Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says, once the Torah makes clear that the father has permission to discipline the child and to raise the child in a certain way, including to hit the child over certain things, so Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says that would be, before I get to what it would be, Shlomo Zalman Auerbach points out the Gemara in Makot says that you're supposed to discipline a child even if the child is learning well or doing well. You still have to throw some discipline into that child's life, because opposed to yaser it bincha, to get the lessons to stick. So that's a broader discussion as well. That's not the topic here, so I won't go into it. But it's Shlomo Zalman Auerbach saying is that part of the experience of parenting is supposed to be that the kid has some awareness of obligations and responsibilities and some fear of punishment. And so the Torah gave the father the right. Now, when we say to hit, it doesn't have to be physically hitting them, right? It could be other ways of discipline. It has to be to make clear to them there's a discipline in life. There are things that one has to and doesn't have to do. If so, then even the 10-year-old or the 11-year-old knows that this is what Hashem wants of him or her. How does he know that? Because the Torah gave the parent the right to hit the child for this purpose. Meaning, the Torah doesn't give a blanket right for a father or a parent to hit a child. The Torah doesn't say, your child's your own thing, beat the child however much you want. It's not true. The Torah says, it's an obligation, particularly of the father, but of both parents, to raise the child properly and appropriately. And in the context of raising the child properly and appropriately, discipline is acceptable and proper and appropriate. If that's true, then theoretically, if the child, for some reason, doesn't get into this, but I think it's just something to notice, theoretically, then if the father or the parent is disciplining the child incorrectly or inappropriately, the child doesn't have to take any lesson for that. The child just has the right to say, that's inappropriate, wrong. But it's clearly true that when it comes to keeping the Torah, the parent has the right to discipline the child. It's appropriate discipline of the child. That means then, now we're back in Rosh Hashanah or Bas Tshuva, that means then that the child knows that this is what Hashem wants. How does the child know this is what Hashem wants? Because Hashem gave the Torah, and Hashem giving the Torah gave rights to the parents to raise the child and discipline the child to get the child to understand. They have to keep the Torah too when they get to be an adult. Now, theoretically, you could have argued that the Torah gave the parent the right to train the child, but the parent's training is enough. So if the kid's off on his own or her own, well, then it's open heart, but open season, and he can do whatever he wants. But Shlomo Zalman is saying, no, it means that if the parent is training you to do this, it means that the child already knows that Hashem wants Jews keeping Shabbos. And if the child knows that Hashem wants keeping Jews Shabbos, v'lachain, he says, ha-reze chashiv ki'ilu gam mitzad atzmo chayav b'chol eila. A broad, broad principle that applies to so many things, and it will apply to non-Jews, as we'll get to in a minute, that once I know, if I ever know, and by I mean any human being, and it's a human being knows that Hashem wants X, it becomes obligatory. Now he says it's not obligatory in the same sense. It's rak eino. It's eino kol kach hazak. It's not as full an obligation, as strong an obligation, as where an adult has an actual specific pasuk and an actual specific law. See if in Shulchan Aruch obligate him, and that's why you'd never think to say, "Well, the child says, look, I'm 11-year-old. I know that Hashem wants me to bench. I'm about to bench. Let me help you fulfill your biblical obligation." So Rosh Hashanah says, "No, no, no. There is a technical aspect to it appearing in a pasuk in the Torah, and that creates even a greater level of obligation, and therefore the issues of who can fulfill whose obligation or help whom fill an obligation, that won't play out by this svara here. But the idea that a minor, as soon as he or she understands that this is what Hashem wants of them, is by that very fact obligated by it, that Rishon Zalman feels is very clear and is very real, and is not like some, you know, nice idea, oh, you should do what Hashem wants of you. He thinks of it as in somewhat more of a technical sense. There's an actual obligation upon the minor to do this. He's convinced of this so much, so he says this also would help to answer a question that the Ran raised about the Ramban. So the Ramban is about this issue that I raised before, the question of whether a child can help an adult fulfill their obligation in benching. So the Gemara in Megillah has a debate, and the Rif, there's a debate, Chacham say no, and Rav Huda says yes. So Tosfos, the Ran points out that Tosfos asked the question, if we're talking about a child who is not old enough to be to be at the age of education, doesn't really understand benching or what it is, and therefore there's no meaning to educating the child in benching. That's before the child is what's called higia lechinuch, reaches the age of education. How could Rabbi Yehuda possibly think that such a child could help an adult fulfill their obligation? Because we say in Rosh Hashanah that if somebody's not obligated, they can't help somebody else fulfill their obligation. And if we're talking about a kid who's reached chinuch, who's reached the age of education, so if he's obligated on a rabbinic level, this is Tosfos' question, then let his rabbinic obligation help fulfill the other guy's rabbinic obligation. So Tosfos gives their own answer. I think Tosfos' answer is that really it's a double derabbanan when a kid is doing it, because he thinks it's a derabbanan, and the benching that they were going to do is derabbanan anyway. I think that's my memory of his answer. But the point is, Tosfos' answer isn't so important to us right here. It's something along those lines, but Tosfos thinks that the kid himself must be obligated. Well, the Ramban's answer is that the machloket is really about who's obligated in the kid's benching. The Ramban thinks that Chachamim, who are the majority view, and therefore we would follow, they think that the child doesn't even have a mitzvah at all. It's not the child, like I said before, it's the father's mitzvah. Yehuda says, I'm sorry, this wasn't about benching, it was also about Megillah, whether a child can help people fulfill their obligation in Megillah. So Yehuda had said that the reason for Megillah, this is what Ramban says, is because shekulam hayu ba'oto anes. They were all part of the same miracle. That's the Ramban's answer to the question. So the reason why a child could read Megillah, according to the Rabbi Yehuda, which we don't paskin, which we don't accept, but for the Ramban, the reason was because they also were part of the miracle. So the Ran now says, I don't understand the Ramban's reasoning. What does being part of a nes have to do with anything? Since he himself, this child, isn't obligated in anything yet. Meaning, says the Ran, when we say that sometimes there are some obligations that we might have thought women wouldn't be included in the obligation, but they are included because they were part of the original miracle that created that obligation. So when we say that, the Ran says, that's because women are Jews, adult Jews already. They're part of the Jewish halachic system, and therefore we can say, and oh, since you were part of this, you'll be included in this. But if you're telling me the kids don't have any obligations of their own, how could help out at all? So the Ran actually doesn't have an answer to that question. The Ran says he thinks, therefore, that the Tosfos' answer about Megillah and about those issues is more correct, which means that he thinks there's some obligation on kids themselves. But what are you going to do for the Ramban? So the Ramban says, my idea could work for that Ramban very well, because since they were part of the miracle. Now, the Ramban doesn't say any of this. This is Shlomo Zalman Auerbach using his creative halachic insight to suggest an idea that makes sense and works and explains the Ramban very well, which is that since the kids were part of the miracle, they'll understand better the need to thank Hashem for this miracle. So since they'll understand it, then it's as if they were commanded, and then Rav Yehuda thinks that that would be even good enough that they could read it for others. I mean, Shlomo Zalman Auerbach said before, even if I'm telling you there's this obligation, you can't think it's an obligation that's so significant like an actual obligation. Now he's suggesting that Ramban might have thought that Rav Yehuda held, no, it could even rise to that level. Now, that's also pointing out then that when it comes to the question of kids understanding something, which Shlomo Zalman Auerbach seems to be saying, there can be different levels of kids understanding things. And there could be, it's not like a kid reaches the age of 9 or 10 or 11 and boom, they're obligated to everything because they understand it. It's more that all those things that their father started disciplining them about, from that moment on they should understand it, because they know that if the father has the right halakhically to discipline them about it, then it must be that Hashem wants it, and then it's their obligation to know about it. So too, when it comes to Purim, since they were part of the original miracle, that experience makes Purim a part of their consciousness sooner, and therefore they'd have the obligation, according to Yehuda, that they could help others fulfill it. So this all is Shlomo Zalman Auerbach's idea about how you can say that even if you think that there's no technical halakhic obligation upon minors, that when Chazal instituted the obligations of chinuch, of educating children, they didn't institute those obligations on the children themselves because they didn't see themselves having that kind of power. Nonetheless, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach thinks the kids develop an obligation anyway, and that's an obligation based on their understanding, that as soon as kids understand that this is what's right, that itself creates an obligation. That's a far-reaching idea. As soon as somebody understands what's right, then it creates an obligation. That applies to lots and lots and lots of things. So too, which is the next step he takes in the tshuva, so too with Bnei Noach, with non-Jews. He says, Shlomo Zalman says, they're all obligated to understand and to believe that everything in the Torah, from the Torah, and everything in the Torah, this is the way he says it, Sha'olam nivra bishvil Yisrael, that the world is created for the Jewish people. Now, I'm not sure, he might mean that literally. He might mean, you know, that we're really we Jews are the center of creation, and they're all here to support us. I'd like to think he means, and I think he might mean, that when he says the Sha'olam nivra bishvil, what he means is, it's created for the Jewish view of the world, and that the Jewish people are the ones representing that view in the world now, and therefore they become the essence of the world, but that it's a world in which others could join that, and then they could be part of, and the world would be created for them as well. That's what I think he means. But that would mean then, that if any place where Chazal, the Chachmei HaTorah, is the phrase that Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach uses, any place that the Chachmei HaTorah see that there's a need to obligate something, and they think that you have to obligate non-Jews as well in that thing, so there's two ways to look at it. You could say, what powers of legislation do Chazal have over non-Jews? Shlomo Zalman Auerbach's answer to that question is that once non-Jews know that the Torah was created, that Hashem gave the Torah, now, of course, today, unfortunately, many non-Jews don't believe that, or they've convinced themselves, even among the non-Jews who think Hashem gave the Torah, they've convinced themselves that that Torah was, and I don't mean this at all that it's true, it's just what their false belief is, was superseded. So that complicates what he's about to say. But he thinks that once they know that Hashem gave the Torah and Hashem empowered Chazal to make legislation, then they need to know that if Chazal or the Torah scholars of a certain time period decide something that applies to non-Jews, they need to know that that's what Hashem wants, and therefore they have to listen. Even if you say lo tasur, even if you say the technical verse of don't stray what from the rabbis told you only applies to the Jewish people, right? So in both cases, Rav Shlomo Zalman is saying there's an obligation the Torah can set up as a blanket obligation, a requirement. So yeah, I was saying there's the technical obligation that a pasuk sets up and to fulfill it. So that you could have, the Torah says, lo tasur, you have to listen to Chazal. Boom, you have to listen to Chazal. So as I'm saying, even if that doesn't apply to somebody, there's this other way to achieve obligation, which is, if I know that it should be done, I know that this is what Hashem wants, that obligates every single human being. And that obligation, he says, may be technically somewhat lower of a lower level, and therefore the question of who can fulfill whose obligation isn't fully understood, isn't fully set by that. But it's an obligation nonetheless in its very full form, and therefore they'd have to listen to Chazal even if they're not included in the prohibition of Lo Tasur. And that would apply too if Chazal decided that it was necessary or important to confiscate money or to give money from one person to the other for some reason, or to set up some set of rules for the purpose of helping the world operate better, and that the non-Jews had not decided to make, but the Jews made it, they'd have to follow that as well. And he thinks that explains, there's a Tosfos in Sanhedrin that we don't have to get into here, but Tosfos in Sanhedrin makes it sound like there might be situations where Chazal would decide that it was worth or proper and appropriate to convert a non-Jew, even if the non-Jew doesn't want to be converted. Now, the truth is, that's a long Tosfot, which I think would bear a long discussion, because I think there's a lot to wonder about there, because that Tosfos is talking about what are the rights of Beit Din to be megayer to convert, but it's talking about minors there. And I think in general, we in Allah assume, so it could be something that Tosfos, sorry, I didn't check the Tosfos fully carefully, we assume that the minor would have to later on agree, and if he didn't agree or she didn't agree, they would have the right to leave the religion. But Rosh Hashanah's basic point is that he thinks that Beis Din has these powers because as soon as a court decides this is what's best, or this is what the Jewish, what Hashem wants, they have the right to decide that, and then the non-Jews, like Jews, have to listen and have to assume that since Hashem wants that, it's obligatory upon them as well. That would mean then that in Halacha, let's suppose you had a Jewish state and you had non-Jews living there, not only could we could the Jewish powers, the halachic powers, require them to observe the seven Noahide laws, that's clear, but if we're in power, Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says, then anything that the Chachamim of the time, the Torah scholars of the time, about money things, about other things, if they establish it, what they're establishing is both a legal reality, that might only apply to Jews, because legal realities, maybe it's only in their power to apply to Jews, but they're also establishing this is what Hashem wants, because Hashem gave the power to Chachamim in each time to declare what's important and necessary at a time, and therefore he thinks that it would apply to non-Jews as well. From that perspective, they would have the obligation to say to themselves, oh, this must be what Hashem wants, and therefore to follow it. However, he says, when it comes to takanot, Chazal said there are many takanot they made that they only made for Jews and not for non-Jews. So if they do that, then it's not true that the non-Jews have to follow it, because the Chachamim were saying, as far as we understand it, this is important for Jews. So for example, Marit Ayin, when it comes to Avodah Zarah, right? The obligation of a Jew is not only not to worship any power other than Hashem, but there's a rabbinic obligation to make sure not to even seem like one has worshipped an Avodah Zarah. So that rabbinic obligation was not legislated for non-Jews by Chazal. Chazal have the ability to do that too, right? They can say, there's something they'll say, this is what needs to happen in the world, or this is what's important for the world, as far as we understand it. Now let's have they say, this is what we understand to be important for the Jewish people. And now's where it really gets interesting. I should have led with this. I'm sorry, I buried the interesting stuff, because this is just an idea of his, right? So he has this idea. And he closes the tshuva by saying, therefore, I don't understand how you brought me a chasam sofer. The chatam sofer wondered about a nekudat kesef in your days. The nekudat kesef is a commentary written by the ktsos to answer, or the shach, to answer the complaints of the taz. I looked it up, I got that right. So the shach wrote the nekudat kesef. So the chasam sofer wonders at the nekudat kesef in your day, who says, whatever he says, that's not important for us right now, because the Chasam Sofer says, "Demisam et Yisrael liot apotrofusim agam al ktanei bnei Noach." Who made the Jews the guardians over minor non-Jews? So that's the Chatam Sofer. So if I am reading a Chatam Sofer, who's arguing with the Nekudot Kesef, and the Nekudot Kesef doesn't talk about that directly, he just sort of implies that the Beit Din has power over non-Jews, Chatam says, who made us responsible for and authoritative over minor non-Jews? So Shlomo Zalman's answer is, I don't even know what you're talking about, because I think it's clear, for this reason. All the more so, he says, I don't understand. You brought me a Shutin Machaneh Chaim. Machaneh Chaim is a man named also Schreiber, but was not related to the Chatam Sofer. But he lived right then. He was one of the students of the Chatam Sofer, but wasn't related to him. And he was, a Rav. I forget what his name, but the Shut Machaneh Chaim, he says, he's surprised at the Mishnah Lamelech. Mishnah Lamelech, Hilchos Malachim, says, if non-Jews had an obligation to have a circumcision, there's a whole discussion about that, because it's unclear in Halacha as to why we limit circumcision to Jews, because Avram Avinu had other children after the time of, they had the B'nai Keturah, after he had Yitzchak, so they would seem to be included in the obligation, and their descendants would seem to be included in the obligation. So that's not all people in the world, so the whole question about, we today don't know who the B'nai Keturah are, so therefore you might think to yourself, well, then everybody should get a Brit Milah just in case, right? So there's a whole discussion about that. That's not our discussion here. But the Mishnah Melech, along that discussion, says, if there was an obligation for non-Jews to have a Brit Milah to circumcise themselves for whatever reason, then a Jewish court, if they had the power to, would have to obligate it. And the Machaneh Chaim says, like the Chatam Sofer, Misam LeBeit Din Shel Yisrael Shoftim Al Umot HaOlam, who made us judges for the rest of the world. So someone says, I don't even know what you're talking about, because the Maharshan Sanhedrin says very clearly, if circumcision was one of the obligations of theirs, then just like a Jewish court can obligate them in the seven Noahide laws, Jewish court can obligate them in Brit Milah. So what you have, it turns out, although Shlomo Zalman Auerbach doesn't approach it from this perspective, what you have is a real long-running debate, we turn out, right? The Chatam Sofer thinks that we don't have any supervisory role over non-Jews, but he's responding to the Nekudat Kesef, who assumed that we sort of do, because he said we could convert non-Jews Jewish children or be aware of that. Yet a Machane Chaim, who didn't understand a Mishle Melech, who says we would force non-Jews to have circumcisions if we had a court and they were living in our area, and the Machane Chaim says, I don't know what you're talking about. We're not obligated. We're not the ones who supervise non-Jews. And someone said, but there's a Marsha that does. So it almost seems like, just from the examples that he gives, and I'm no Bucky to know if there are other examples out there, there may be, it almost seems like in the area of the Chatam Sofer, him and his student had come to understand, maybe the student learned it from his Rebbe, had come to understand that there was no such obligation, but there were many other sources that implied that there is such an obligation, that whenever a Jewish court is around, if they come to believe that something is important or obligatory upon non-Jews, they have the right to institute on that. That would be true of circumcision, it would be true perhaps of conversion, it would be true of lots of things. So if someone's on an Orbach says, so I see all these sources that tell me that you can and we do, so I don't even know why the Chatam Sofer and his student think the other way. And he says, I think that I've now given a reason to understand how that comes about. It comes about because any determination that Chachmei Yisrael make, the Torah scholars make, and they decide to make an obligation for non-Jews, then it's obligatory for non-Jews, even if it's not by the usual process of law. The usual process of law is that a legal body makes a rule, and there's a whole bunch of people who are obligated by that rule by legal technicalities. Someone's saying it might not even be by legal technicalities, it might be just by the declaration of something as being what's appropriate and important would be enough to obligate people to understand this is what should be done, and therefore they're obligated to do it. So that is Shlomo Zalman Auerbach's tshuva from the 8th of Nisan, and it took us, you know, I never know how long things are going to take us, because I never know what issues come up as I'm thinking about it and talking about it, but it's taken us most of our time, but there is this interesting tshuva of Rav Menashe Klein that I mentioned at the outset, so I don't want to deny it to you. In Mishneh Halachot, or Mishaneh Halachot, no, it's Mishneh Halachot, the fifth volume, response number 164, so there's it's from the 8th of Nisan of 1963, there's a guy asked him about, the Gemara says, Rav Shlomo HaNagid, he has a Mevo HaTalmud. If you look in the back of a traditional printing of Brachot, with all the commentaries in the back, they have a Mevo HaTalmud, they have an introduction to the Talmud, but Rav Shlomo HaNagid, who lived like around the turn of the non-Jewish millennium, somewhere in the 11th century, I'm pretty sure, and he was an important political figure. I think he had like an army, he was given by the non-Jewish authorities real political power, and he was also a Talmud Chacham, a Torah scholar, and he wrote an introduction to the Talmud, giving us rules about the Talmud. One of the rules he gives is that Ein Lemedin Min HaHagadot, that we don't learn from Hagadot, and then I can't get into the whole discussion. It's an interesting tshuva. It's about when there are non-halachic sections of the Gemara, what do we have to do with them, what do we not have to do with them? And that gets a question of interpretation as well, because how are we allowed to interpret Gemara or not interpret Gemara? So when it comes to non-halachic portions, halachic portions, Renash Kalein, it's clear. Halachic portions work in a certain way. You have the halachic process, and you have to apply the halachic process there. And then also in terms of interpretation, you have to do it in the classic, whatever the ways are of interpretation that have been classically understood to be acceptable and to be appropriate, that's the limitation. But when it comes to non-halachic portions of the Gemara, so there, and that's the Haggadot, we don't learn halacha from them. And then there's lots of opinions. He points out the Rabbi of the Mor Nevuchim thinks that many expressions of the Gemara are metaphors. He uses the phrase Melitzat Shir Na'e. So if they're metaphors, they're open to lots of different interpretations, and that's all fine because it's just a metaphor. Now, I have to say, I don't know if it's all fine, because I think even when somebody uses a metaphor, they mean certain things and other things, and it might be that they used a metaphor that has ramifications they didn't fully realize, and that might also expand the level of interpretation, but it doesn't mean that it's completely open season. But then Menashe Klein points out, but even that isn't clearly accepted by everybody. The Ritva seems to think, and he quotes the Ritva, but we don't have time to get into it, but the Ritva seems to think that when Chazal attach something to verses, it's not stam, it's not just like an allegory, a metaphor, they just picked a verse that was helpful to them. There's something in the verse that led to it, and it was latent within that verse. Now that vision of it would say that even though it might be that interpretation can be much broader than we usually think of it as, it's not completely malleable, it's not like you do anything you want, and therefore there would be limitations to those kinds of things. And then he brings, and he closes, so I can bring it here and this, I do have time to get into. He says the Tosfos Yom Tov, which is Rav Yom Tov Lipman Heller, is an important commentary in Mishnah. So Yom Tov to Nazir says, even though he gave an interpretation of a Mishnah, that's not our issue here, but he says, even though the Gemara doesn't interpret it this way, since it doesn't have any halachic ramifications, it doesn't have any halachic effect, then I can interpret it any way I want to. So he says, I don't see any difference between commenting on a Mishnah or commenting on the Mikra, on the Tanakh. So in Tanakh, everybody knows that Midrashim say all sorts of things. And as long as it doesn't have halachic ramifications. Everybody thinks it's fine. So this is the chiddush, this is the new idea that new in that time. I wrote a PhD dissertation when I suggested the 1500s, 1600s is around when this idea becomes real, that people say, you can do that for Mishnah too. You can do that for Gemara too. As long as you're not affecting the halachic issues, then you can give, you know, any commentary, any interpretation that you think is appropriate, then you have the right to do it. So that's what Menashe Klein holds as well. So I think there are limits, I think there are problems with that, because I think it ends up that people say a lot of interesting things and come a lot of, by interesting, in this case, I mean things that don't seem to have any real source in the source they're quoting, and then they becomes in their minds Jewish values. So I have a problem with that, but again, this is not my forum, so I won't get into it a lot. I'll just say that becomes somewhat of an issue, because when we interpret things, we come to think of us, we're sort of saying, and this source is telling me this. If you say, well, I'm not telling you the source telling you this, I'm telling you that I'd like to use the source because it's a good memory device, but the source isn't really saying it, I'm just saying it, so then it's only as correct as I say it. So that becomes an issue that comes up. But fundamentally, Rav Klein raises for us, and we only it very briefly. He says it's a more sophisticated presentation of it, so I hope I didn't do it an injustice. The question of when the Gemara says statements that aren't halakhic statements, what are the role of interpretation? What do we take from them? What can we take from them? And those are all issues of Ein Lemedin Min HaHagadot. When we say that we don't take halakha out of Hagadot, that opens up whole new vistas that might be open more for us to do various things that we wouldn't do with halakhic issues. And that is a response of the day for the 8th of Nisan, with gratitude to the OU, to David Hakaza, to Rabbi Jacob Bramowitz. I wish you a good day.